So in this talk, I will try to explain to you how we think we've understood that abundance and especially abundance ratios can tell us about both stellar nucleosynthesis and galaxy formation. And my approach will be an astroarchaeological approach, in the sense that we start from what we see now and we go backward in time and try to reconstruct the history of the evolutionary history of the Milky Way and also of other galaxies. So first I will describe the basic tools to build the chemical evolution models. I'll try to go relatively fast because I want to concentrate more on the results, but for those who are not familiar, maybe it's useful to see. Then I will discuss some scenarios for the formation of the Milky Way, then a comparison from various authors' results, and of course a comparison theory versus observation, which is very important, and some tentative conclusions. So the basic tools to build the chemical evolution models are, first of all, initial condition. You have to think if you want to start with something already present or you want to accrete everything, and which is the metallicity of the gas. It is primordial or it is pre-enriched. Then the main driver of galaxy evolution, in my opinion, is the star formation history. And this is very important. Unfortunately, we don't know that much. And we used to separate the birth rate function into two functions, the star formation rate and the initial mass function. And then, of course, the stellar yields. What the stars do in their interior, they produce new elements and they re-eject them into the interstellar medium, out of which the new stellar generations will form. And very important related to this is to study the effect of supernovae of different type in the chemical enrichment. Then a very important ingredient is the stellar lifetimes. Nowadays, if we want to compare with observation, which relates to very specific chemical elements, we need to reject the instantaneous recycling approximation, which is good only for elements like oxygen or magnesium, which are produced on very fast time scale. Then, of course, there are a whole other complications, if you want, gas flows, inflow, outflow. So the star formation rate here, I just show what is normally used in model of chemical evolution. We have been heard a very interesting talk before on star formation, and we have seen already this is the Kennicott-Schmidt law with the K of 1.4. Kennicott in his original paper suggested also this other version of star formation rate, which depends on the rotation angular speed of gas. And they are equivalent in order to explain the data. Then some people want to introduce more complication, and it says also dependence on the total surface mass density, which in a certain sense takes into account of the feedback, because of course the potential well will have something to do when you have a region of star formation and the new star formation cannot occur immediately. You have to wait that the gas cools and that this has to do with the total surface mass density. And then this was also in star formation rate induced by spiral density waves when you have a dependence from the rotational velocity in the disk. Then the initial mass function is generally a power law. And for the disk of the Milky Way, we find that the best IMF are either Scalar or Krupa. They are a multi-slope IMF, which have a flatter slope for stars below two solar masses and steeper for stars above. Sulfider IMF all over the mass range is used in many cases, but for the disk of the Milky Way, it overproduces metals. And the inflow law. The inflow law is very important. Well, I have to say that in this kind of model, we assume that at least the disk of the Milky Way is made up of gas accretion. And so you have to assume some inflow law. And you can, some models I'd assume it constant or linear, but in most of the cases, it's assumed to be an exponential like this, where tau is a parameter and it gives you the time scale for deformation at that particular radius. And in principle, so these are three parameters, both this and this, but in principle this law should be given by the dictated by the halo of dark matter of the Milky Way. And we have done something in this sense, as I show you in a minute. And then there is the outflow. Some galaxies, especially the low mass one, are likely to have outflows. They are observed. Crystal Martin has published a series of papers where she shows that the dwarf galaxies are having galactic winds. And in most of the cases, we use a rate which is a parameter, lambda, multiplied the star formation rate. This parameter could be 1 or even larger than 1. And then the stellar years. Stellar years, just to remind quickly, that we call low intermediate mass stars, stars in this mass range, and they produce mainly carbon, they produce mainly helium, nitrogen, carbon, and some heaviest process elements, such as barium, and they die all as carbon-oxygen white dwarf when they are single. But if they are in a binary system, they may give rise to type 1a supernovae, and then they produce a huge amount of iron, which is 0.6 solar masses each. And massive stars are all exploding by core collapse supernovae. They could be type 2 or type 1 BC. The type 1 BC are related to the gamma ray burst. And they are mainly produced the alpha elements, but some iron also, and some light as process elements. So we have this scheme in mind, and very important, the type 1a supernovae and the time scale at which they start restoring their products in galaxies. We have two main channels, the single degenerate model and the double. And in both of them, this is something that many people ignore, I think. And partly it's my fault, because in an old paper we said that the time scale for the enrichment of type 1a is 1 giga year in the solar neighborhood. That's true, but this is the time scale at which supernovae type 1a are enough to make their effect to be visible. But the very first type 1a start much before, because an 8 solar mass star, so 8, 9, can give rise to a carbon-oxygen white dwarf. And these have a lifetime of 30, 31 mega years. And even in the double degenerate model, where you have to wait for the gravitational wave emission to have the two dwarfs to merge, the minimum time scale, as calculated by Laura Greggio in 2006, is 1 mega year. So supernovae occurs also, this supernovae, in the region of star formation, and they have been seen by, and this is an interesting paper by Mannucci et al. We will call it prompt type 1a. Of course, before you see the effect of their iron production, will pass a time which is longer than this. But this is important to be taken into account. Then we put all of this in these simple equations, and looks not simple, but it is. We write an equation like this for each element. This contains everything: the star formation rate, the recycling of material by each stellar generation. The type 2 supernovae are in this integral, and A is the fraction of binary system which are in the IMF and are such to produce these supernovae. And this is fixed by reproducing the present time type 1a rate. Then these are all always the contribution of different mass ranges to the interstellar medium when stars die, plus an accretion term and an outflow term when necessary. Now, let's start with the theories on the formation of the Milky Way. This is the oldest one, and this is a painting of Tintoretto, a Venetian painter. It's not in Italy, unfortunately. It's the National Gallery in London. And as many of our things that have been stolen. and in fact, I wanted to put it on my book front page, and I couldn't because they didn't let me. They wanted me to pay a lot, but Tintoretto was dead 5 centuries ago. Anyway. That is a nice story. This is the goddess Hera, which is... doesn't want to breastfeed Hercules, because Hercules was the son of Jupiter and a nympha. So she was right. She said, go away. And and the milk felt and formed the Milky Way. So now we have evolved from that, although it is a nice picture, and thanks to Galileo, we know that the Milky Way is made up of an innumerable number of stars. And then let's jump a bit, and let's go to 1962. Egan, Lindenbell, and Sandage suggested that the galaxy collapse lasted for 300 mega years to form the old galaxy. Now we know that this time scale is too short, and that the story has been much more complex than this. But Searle and Zinn in 1978 proposes a central collapse, but that the outer halo formed by merging of large fragments on time scale larger than 1 giga year, and this looks much more like the idea we have now. In fact, in the hierarchical structure formation of the halo should have formed by merger of stellar subunits. And the evidence for accretion is there in the outer halo, as shown in a paper by Carollo et al. Now, these are different approaches to model the Milky Way from chemical evolution modeler. One is the twinfold approach, which we suggested in 1997, and other people have followed, and which I'll show you in a minute. And then it's some stochastic approach, especially for deformation of the halo, where the mixing is not very efficient. But most of this, this paper have predicted a too large spread compared with what we indeed observe. But certainly there must have been some not efficient mixing. Then hierarchical formation of the halo has been already shown by this series of interesting papers. And more recently, I've read an interesting paper by Schoenrich and Binney where they've included also stellar dynamics and stellar migration in chemical evolution. And this is a twinfold model. This is an artistic view. It's not a simulation. And so first we think that the halo also formed by inflow of gas very fast, a la Egan, Lingenbell, and Sandage in a way, and that the central part of this collapse, the gas that collapsed, that was left out of this collapse, went to form the bulge, which is something similar to what Rosie Weiss said yesterday. And then you form the disk, and the disk is formed inside the center. First collapse the inner parts, and then gradually we form the outer part, and probably the external part is still forming now, and could be witnessed by the high and very high velocity clouds that we observe. So this is this is a series of infall. I want to show this because the law with which we accrete is very important, and normally it's just an exponential one, like in Chiappini et al. We assume that the first infall episode form the halo and probably also part of the thick disk. That is not clear, of course, because we don't have a dynamical thing. But and the second one formed the thin disk. And in this paper, which is a poster by Edoardo Colavitti here, we tried just to make a simulation, a cosmological simulation of dark matter done with Gadget 2 of Springer, and try to find the halos which best match the Milky Way. And he found four, and the one who matched best the condition we've set is this one. And as you can see, it looks very similar to the two info models, just a little bit of a shift in time. But we have two main episodes of accretion. And this one must have formed the halo and this other the disk. So when you put it into a chemical evolution model, it gives very similar results to the two info models. And I was surprised at the beginning, but this is what it came up. Now, let's go back to the standard models. This is the prediction of the two infall model by Chiappini et al. For the G-dwarf metallicity distribution. This is distribution is by Cotoneva et al. These are the two predictions, and as you can see, the most important parameters here is the time scale for the formation of the disk. And in order to have a good fit, we needed here 8 giga year. If you assume that the disk has formed more quickly, like 2 giga year, then you get to this, which is not good at all. So, of course, it's not like Egan, Lindenbell, and Sandage. The disk must have accreted very slowly. and probably inside out. And this is the prediction for the elements over iron as a function of iron. This is a very good diagnostic tool, this kind of diagrams. This is from a paper by François et al. They yield mainly Woosley and Weaver 95. Some of them have been slightly corrected, especially magnesium, because they do not produce enough magnesium to reproduce the solar value. But the trend is good. And these are the data of Cairel et al. For very metallic stars. And this shows what we call the time delay model. The fact that at the beginning, during the halo, you have mainly type 2 supernovae producing both oxygen and iron. Then type 1a supernovae becomes important, and the ratio goes down. And the time at which becomes important is around here. And you can also derive the time scale for the formation of the inner halo from this diagram. Because if you say, well, roughly, more or less, the inner halo came, the maximum metallicity is minus 1. We know there is an overlapping with the thick disk, but if you take that as a reference, you have that a model like this takes 1.2 giga year to arrive there. So, and this is corresponds also to the difference in age in globular cluster in the inner halo. So this is comforting. And so these are the alpha elements, which are normally well reproduced. And some model, those who are predicting, inhomogeneous model are predicting a much larger spread. Although for the alpha element, the spread seems to be there also for this star. The Cairel et al. Data show very little spread for some particular elements, but not for this. In any case, it's lower than what would be predicted by those models. This is a model from Prantsos to show you, shows all the elements that still there are problems with several elements, like the iron peak and also nitrogen. Here, nitrogen goes down because in the model is assumed to be secondary in massive star. We will see in a minute that if we assume that it's primary, as in the model with the stellar rotation by Medere et al., we go up here. So, still, the yields of this of some elements are not in agreement with each other, because these two, one, the pink is Chieffi and Limongi, and and the other are Woosley and Weaver. What about carbon and nitrogen, are two special elements? Because we don't know much about the nucleosynthesis. So, especially nitrogen. You see, these are data from stars at very low metallicity. In T over H, we are at minus 4 here. And you see, the nitrogen over oxygen looks quite high. The models with the standard nucleosynthesis, primary nitrogen in massive stars, do this. But if we take the yield by the group of Medere with stellar rotation, then we can get this line here, which is much better, in much better agreement. So it looks like if these data are to be trusted, because nitrogen, to measure nitrogen in this dwarf, of metal poor dwarf, is not easy for what I know, then we should conclude that nitrogen is primary. So this is an example of how we can put constraint on stellar nucleosynthesis. And this is what I like you to show, because this is a tool which can be used for several things, also to understand the nature of unidentified high-redshift objects. So here, the alpha over iron as a function of iron, these kind of diagrams, are not universal. They depend strongly on the history of star formation, because the phi over h increases in a different way if you have a different history of star formation. And this proves that if you have a very fast star formation, like in the bulge or an elliptical galaxy, you have a very long plateau here, and then the knee occurs at metallicity which are even above solar. This is the solar neighborhood, the sketch of the solar neighborhood. This is an irregular Magellanic, which is the contrary. It's going, is much steeper. So you have situation in which you have low phi over h and low alpha over iron, and high phi over h and high alpha over iron. So I said, but what's going on? It's very easy, simple instead, because if we take this as a time axis and we concentrate on this point, in the solar neighborhood here we are at 1.5 giga year. and is when the supernovae type 1a start to restore the bulk of iron. Here, we are at 300 mega years in the bulge, so all the iron here is made by type 2 because the star formation is much stronger. So when the type 1a eventually come, we are already at an high iron. And here is the contrary. Here, if we go here, we are at 5-6 giga years since the beginning of star formation. So it's like if you take the solar neighborhood curve and you shift it toward the left when the star formation is much lower, and you shift it towards right when the star formation is much stronger. And this can be applied to any element. And here I've shown some points from the Large Magellanic Clouds and from Damped Lyman Alpha system. Clearly, this graph shows that Damped Lyman Alpha can be dwarf irregular, but not bulges. So with this kind of diagram, we can have an idea of what we're looking at.
So Francesca, in that previous plot, what is alpha specifically?
Alpha, it's oxygen here.
Just oxygen.
Yes. But this is a sketch of what would be. In reality, I think we made oxygen, or oxygen plus magnesium. But it doesn't change.
One more question. Everybody puts it like this, alpha or iron versus iron. Because we don't have the time scale maturation. But you know the time scale in the model. What if it was quarter versus time estimation? Does it look differently, the same way?
Yes, it looked different because now I can't describe it to you in words, but it certainly looked different, yes, because you have to think here that this one occurs at the time much longer than this and than this. So we can discuss it later because I've done it many times, but now I don't remember exactly how it looks like. I don't want to say something wrong. Anyway, let's have a look if this works in several systems. So here is thin disk and bulge. This has been shown already by Rosie Weiss. This is thin, thick disk and bulge. The bulge are the black, the red are the thick, and the blue are the thin disk. This shows that in the bulge, both oxygen, especially magnesium over iron, is much higher than in the others. And you see, it's very flat. It looks like what I've shown you. But I'm going to show you the exact prediction. And this is now been challenged by another paper by Melendez et al., in which they say that yes, the bulge and the thick disk have higher alpha over iron than the thin disk, but the thick disk and the bulge have similar ones. Now, in order to have a perfect fit of the bulge, we need also to have a sort of sulpeter IMF, slightly flatter, as I said the other day to Rosie. And this will give higher oxygen over iron. Now, if they are the same, we should conclude that the thick disk probably have the same IMF of the bulge. But the situation is a bit open because there are some papers who say something, who say differently. And in any case, the thick disk itself has alpha over iron larger than thin disk, so it must have evolved faster. This is the prediction for the bulge for magnesium over iron, which is I'm particularly proud of. And this is done with a model in which a star formation rate is just stronger than in the Milky Way and a flatter IMF. And the time scale for the formation of the bulge we found is 0.3 giga year. In this time scale, you form the bulk of stars. And as you can see, the knee is much occurs at much higher metallicities than the solar neighborhood. This is another interesting application to the bulge. There was a strange, apparently strange behavior, which is oxygen over magnesium as a function of magnesium goes down steep. And you would never say that because oxygen and magnesium are produced in massive stars, so you would expect constant. My original model with the normal yields does that, in fact. In order to have this nice slope, this is the bulge prediction, this is the solar neighborhood, we used the yield with the mass loss from MEDER 92, where metallicity higher than solar, you lose a lot of carbon, which results into a much less production of oxygen. And since the mass loss affects oxygen but not magnesium, this seems a nice solution. So this is another example how we can constrain the stellar yield. And this is the thick disk. These are data from different sources. This is a paper by Chiappini, 2008. Here it shows two neat, nice sequences for the thick disk, there is the pink and the thin disk. And here I plotted phi over oxygen as a function of oxygen, but the thing doesn't change. And as you can see, this is the thick disk here is predicted by a model which evolves faster than the thin disk. They're not together, they're separated. And you see, it looks like the thick disk formed in a coherent way. They have that two sequences. So I'm tempted to say that I don't believe that all the thick disks are formed by merging of stellar systems. Maybe the outer thick disk, but the other looks much more like a coherent process. And also for those people who said the type 1a supernovae haven't appeared during the thick disk, here is what happens if we switch off the type 1a supernovae in the thick disk. This part. So type 1a supernovae do occur during the thick disk, and they are responsible of the bending. Now, so what have we learned from that? That the inner stellar halo must have formed on the time scale of 1.5 giga year, that the local disk should have formed on 6-8 giga year, that the thick disk formed more quickly, 2 giga year, and the bulge just formed on 0.3-0.5. The thin disk formed inside out, probably with longer time scale in the outer parts, which are still forming. Now, I don't have time to go through all the abundance gradients, which just to say that the inside out helps to reproduce the gradient. This is gradient abundance gradient. The two curves are, one is the gradient several giga years ago, and the one at the present time. This is a mixture of stars and gas. And we predict that the abundance gradient steepens in time. Other authors predict the contrary, and this is from Boissier and Prantsos. This is what the gradient is at 1 giga year, at 5, at 13, it flattens. I think the difference is because we assume a threshold in the star formation rate. And so there are still some open questions in the Milky Way formation, and did the stellar halo form by accretion of system of gas inflow? I think that many speakers have shown that it's possible to form it by subsystem, and the thin disk probably formed by gas accretion inside out and from gas accretion. And the fundamental question is also, can chemical evolution model differ from the hypothesis of a hierarchical model, and they assume gas accretion? Can we distinguish among all of these things just with chemical abundances? Let me show you the last example, which is the dwarf spheroidal galaxies. This is the Alpha over Orion. This is a famous figure by Matthew, and in which you say the Milky Way and dwarf spheroidal. As you see, the Alpha over Orion go much steeper, as in the diagram I've shown before for dwarfs. And the difference in that diagram was that the star formation rate was much slower than the solar neighbor. And what we did with Lanfranchi is to model a typical dwarf spheroidal with star formation going on for 8 giga year, some stellar feedback and occurrence of galactic quint. And here you see at the prediction, we are at data of several dwarf spheroidal. The different curves are for different efficiencies of star formation. So as you can see, what is important is that they will reproduce the steep decrease. But we did better than that because we modeled some specific galaxies. This is from papers of Andreas Koch. He will show them after me much better. And this is Carina, and this is the metallicity distribution that we predict for Carina, and under is his observed one, which is astonishingly good, the agreement. Then for the alpha element, there are some big errors here. These are the prediction of the same models for the alpha element on the data of Andreas. And the fact that the alpha over iron ratios are low at the same phi over h in dwarf spheroidal indicates a different history of star formation, namely much slower star formation and also outflows. And, I think how many minutes I have? One? Well, and I have this and another slide of summary, but I would conclude that the time delay model works well in interpreting the abundances. And the time scale for the formation, the various galactic components can be inferred by that. And the thin and the thick disk abundance suggests that the thick disk by gas infall works, and probably the external part have been accreted, and the thing formed slowly by inside out. The bulge must have formed very fast, even faster than in a halo. And the local dwarf spheroidal, as I said, seems to have formed star for several giga years, and their star formation must have proceeded much more slowly than in the Milky Way. And also galactic winds and or stripping of gas should have played a role, because they don't have gas. And the halo certainly might have formed by accretion of satellites, but we would like to see more data on very low metallicity stars, both in dwarf spheroidal and in the Milky Way. And I've seen that also this conference has some new data on the dwarf have been presented, and that there are stars also with few over H, less than minus 3. I think that from this comparison, and especially from the comparison of the alpha over iron ratio and also the SNR process over iron ratio, we can have a better understanding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Judy, back there.
Seems to me that a more ironclad way of getting at the time scales is through isotopic ratios. They're much better than elemental ratios. And, you know, we tried to do this.
Yeah, once I modeled carbon 12 over carbon 13.
No, we've done the magnesium isotopes.
Oh.
Carbon 12 over carbon 13 is not very useful because
there's so
much mixing, you don't know what's going on.
That's right.
We've actually done the magnesium isotopes. There's a paper in FJ Letters maybe a year or two ago, and the sample's now much larger, and I think that is the real way to get at the halo formation time scale.
I think we should do that.
It's done.
Other questions?
Which time scale, by the way, you derive?
The halo.
Mm-hmm. Very short. Oh, even less.
More on the topic of timescales, I was just going to comment that if you look at the turnoff ages of stars in the thick disk, or if you look at the thick disk population and look at the turnoff colors as a function of metallicity, then you indeed find that the thick disk is basically a uniformly old population. And so again, I think you have to argue that they formed in a very short timescale. And also the mean metallicity of the thick disk is also an important parameter. And that's really quite high. It's about minus 0.6 dex. And so again, I think that points to forming the stars quickly in a fairly deep potential well, and so in situ in the galaxy.
All right. Well, you went a little fast for me, but I wanted to make sure I understood this. When you said that the spheroid or the halo formed over 1.5 gigayears and the disk over 6 to 8 gigayears, you're talking about how long the stars had to take in forming, right? Not necessarily in when they were assembled. Is that correct?
Well, for the halo, I speak about when the bulk of stars are formed. And for the disk, I speak more on when the disk is more or less 80% of the mass of the disk is in place.
But what matters if you're looking at the metallicities is how long you've had to have the feedback to get the metallicities. It doesn't tell you anything about where the stars had to have formed, or how long the gas had to have been in the same place.
Well, the feedback is given by the stellar lifetimes. Every star is born at a certain time and then dies at a certain time. So this kind of model takes into account that in detail. That then I calculate the history of stellar medium, the abundances of the interstellar medium. And the time scales are derived, if you remember, for the disk by the stellar metallicity distribution of the G-dwarf. And with that particular distribution is very sensitive to the time scale with which you form the disk. And for the halo, I just looked simply at when the metallicity of minus one or so was reached.
So I think that what Heidi's asking, though, is there a degeneracy between a short sort of egg and Lindenbell type formation and, you know, sort of short formation in multiple building blocks that was then assembled. Is that correct? Is that degenerate?
I don't think so. Egenly and Melisendage is okay for the inner halo, probably. I mean, it's still the time scale are short.
But is it right?
But not for the disk. The disk must have formed much more slowly and not out of gas shed by the halo. As you remember the figure shown by Rosie Wise, in which the momentum distribution of stars in the disk looks very different from the one of the bulge and the halo. So it looks like no gas or very little gas from the halo has gone into the disk. So it must have been formed out of gas coming from outside.
Well, Josh first and then Julio.
Yeah, I've been slow to appreciate the importance of the S processes, especially when you compare light to heavy to very heavy S process elements. And Manda Caracas did a fantastic thesis with Latanzio on this. And then they were saying things like that, that when the gas is very metal poor, you get big scatter of elements showing different histories because of the number of neutrons per iron nucleon. But now people have observed that in the LMC. They see incredible variations in populations between yttrium to barium. And so I'm suggesting to you, if you could get into the S process in your models, that would be...
Sure. We have done...
Take on board Amanda's thesis. It's very exciting.
Absolutely. We have done some, but I didn't have time to show it for the dwarf spheroidals and compare it to the Milky Way. I'm aware of paper of Amanda, and we are going to use it. In the previous paper, we just had to have some guess about especially the formation of barium R, because there are no calculation for air process. For the barium S, we took the one of Gallino, Busso.
Yeah, so it's the strongest lever arm I've seen so far in terms of metallicity effect. It's really quite impressive.
Yes, no, that's very important, but it would require another hour to discuss those.
Yeah, let me make a comment about the fact that you seem to find some kind of coherence in the abundance, you know, properties and trends of the thick disk, and whether that actually means there was form in situ. And when you look at the stars in the thick disk, you're actually looking at them in the solar neighborhood. This is a tiny little volume of the galaxy. Therefore, and if you, for example, want to rule out the fact that all the stars may have come from the accretion of a satellite, for example, you may want to look at, for example, what is the survey of satellites around the Milky Way today? If you put all the stars and all the satellites of the Milky Way in a bag and just grab one at random, grab two at random, grab three at random, grab four at random, grab all of them at random, they all come from one of them, the LMC. Mm-hmm. Right? Therefore, if you are going to find the accretions of remnants of a satellite in the solar neighborhood today, most likely you're going to find them all come from the biggest accreted object. And that didn't form here, formed somewhere else, right? So going from the coherence to an in situ formation, I think it's a big leap that might not be totally warranted.
I agree. What I showed is that if you take a model with gas accretion, you get that agreement. So that might make us think that there could be something right with that. But what I have difficulty with, the difficulty I have with accretion of stellar system is that you need a really fine tuning to have a trend that goes in a certain way. I would expect something more random, you know, if you have accreted stars, because each object might have evolved in a different way. So it is well possible, but you need a fine tuning to do that.
No, they're accreted from most of the stars of the... come from a single object.
Well, then I believe when you show the alpha Virial ratios fitted perfectly. I'll change my mind.
Well, I think Amina wants to follow up, so let her do that.
No, it's a slightly different question, but related to the thick disk, which is Bensby and Feldsing have been, using some new data, have been finding that the thick disk extends up to solar metallicity, but at a higher alpha. So can you do this with your model?
Yes, because if it forms very fast, like the bulge, you arrive at solar metallicities with high alpha over iron. It's what I've just said.
But then
done.
You have to form the thin disk.
The thin disk...
I mean, you can't do this in a single episode, right?
No, sure, it's done in different episodes, that. Of course, if you those curves that I've shown for the thick and the thin disk are done in different episodes, of course. This is a new model that Cristina Chiappini has put forward, where she has separated the two. And I think that if you go up until the solar valley, this is again a proof that must have formed in situ all of this sequence so long. But I'm ready to change my mind if I see that some coherent model can explain exactly the same things.
So actually, if there's time, I wanted to follow up on Julio's point. Actually, it's sort of a question for Julio. Should I ask that? But I'm hoping you'll jump in too. I get that accreted disks are interesting, but surely the point about accretion, it's not going to be the dominant population. That's not what you're arguing, right? The dominant population, by definition, well, not definition, sort of my assumption would be the dominant population is going to form in the deepest potential well, so in situ, mm-hmm. and there may be an accreted component, but you're not... Yeah. So you accrete two things, and one's smaller and one's onto a larger thing. Then the larger thing, I would expect to have more stars and be the dominant population. Right, Julio? I mean, you're not advocating the entire disk is forming by accretion.
But I have a question for people. Sorry.
Did you want to comment?
No, I have a question for hierarchical people. Why you don't like gas to be accreted? Why it has to be stars? I mean, cosmological context can stay there and then gas accreted. Why there have to be stars?
Let me give a simple argument.
Yeah.
Maybe not completely correct, but at least simple.
Try the correct one first.
Which is the fact that the thick disk, if it has the same properties of the scale length as the thin disk, and it's rotating almost at the same speed as the thin disk, will have almost the same specific angular momentum as the thin disk. It would have been formed, 10, 12 giga years ago. It is very, very unlikely in Lambda CDM models to form something that has that much angular momentum content so early on, because you still need to go expand, turn around, mm-hmm. and collapse and form these things. Mm-hmm. So it's very unlikely. So it's a way out of what I think is a reasonably difficult problem for this kind of cosmogonies. As I said, it might not be correct, but I think all this. Possibilities need to be explored, and I don't see anything in the data that contradicts it dramatically. It might not be the easiest thing to swallow, but mm-hmm. it's not impossible.
So do you want to respond to that, or?
No, I'm listening, and I'll think about it.
At least in the whole number of Chris Brooks simulation and also recent cosmological simulation, the Milky Way scale, that the relative 10 giga year ago, it's big enough to make the disk from the core accretion. And that highlight part of the issue to that potential make kinematically gas is big, thicker, and then they can make a thick, thick disk in situ 10 giga years ago. And then they settle down that highlight clustering, and then you can make a very cold, thin disk. So you thick disk first and thin disk later, and in situ. It's possible, scenario.
I'd just like to make 2 points. One is that it's absolutely, in my view, it's absolutely essential to take into account radial mixing. It's not an optional process. It's not something that might happen. It's something which thermodynamics demands to happen. And it does make a fundamental change. And I think some nice simplifying changes in which the thick disk and the thin disk especially form very much en suite out of gas. Very naturally, the dichotomy emerges just out of the supernovae. No two episodes and things. And on Julio's discomfort, I would like just to turn the knife an extra half turn because with a paper that's coming soon, I hope, which reanalyzes the reanalyzed Hipparchos data, because they've been completely reworked by Floor van Leeuwen. And I think it's modeling these, it becomes clear, extremely clear, that the solar neighborhood is extremely old. It started, you can't get it down below 10 point something giga years ago, no matter how hard you try. And when I say start, it didn't just start gently, one or two stars formed. At that time, the star formation rate has to be a factor of several larger than the star formation rate now. So there was massive star formation going on right here with obviously large angular momentum more than 10 giga years ago. I really don't think that's an escapable thing. And if your theory has a problem with that, I'm sorry, I think your theory has a problem.
I think we have to move on, unless there's any urgent question. No? Okay. Let's thank Francesca once again.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm very pleased.